One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 67 for March 2015, a special on clicks in the US. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a special episode that we're going to be doing talking about cliques in American high schools. We've been mentioning this here and there a couple of times, and I said I would like to do an episode about this at some point because it's something that is weirdly separate from the rest of the world, and at the same time, it resonates, I think, with a lot of people and kids and teenagers in the rest of the world. And I don't always want to do these specials to be about one country. I want to have just an exploration of a specific topic that is culturally different in different parts of the world for sure, but not necessarily a country. So I think this topic, the cliques in U.S. high schools, was a very interesting one to discuss. And to help me do that, I have a returnee of the show. Wendy Dunford is back with us. Hey, how's it going, Wendy?
Well, how are you?
I am very well. I'm very good. You know, I'm appreciating the first days of spring in this northern barren land of ours.
Yeah, it's still cold.
Yeah. So yeah. You're in Sweden too.
Yes.
I mean, you're in Sweden and I'm in Finland, so it's kind of the, you know.
And are you in Helsinki?
Yes.
Okay. So you're in the warmest part of Finland. And I'm in the southern of parts of, not the very southern, but you know, west coast southern. So we are doing well compared to our northern friends.
Yeah, I don't even want to know how they deal with it.
Yeah, it's still dark there.
Yeah, it's getting nice now though. So
yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. So yeah, as people might figure out from your accent, you're from the US originally, and you happen to be a psychotherapist, and you probably have a little bit of insight about this strange phenomenon of cliques in the US.
Yes, but my real qualification is I was in a clique in high school.
I'm excited now. So yeah. I was going to ask which clique, but I'm going to leave that for just in a couple of minutes.
That's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly. Before though, I just want to address very quickly something about the previous episode, the regular episode for February, where we discussed amongst other things, work reform laws, labor laws for France. And there were a couple of people who very kindly, but pretty saliently, mentioned that they enjoyed the conversation. They thought there was interesting points being made, but they lamented the fact that I was being, along with my co-hosts, a horrible capitalistic right-wing sellout. Basically, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but I thought, without commenting on the nature of all of this, I just thought it was really interesting because at the beginning of the show, or at the beginning of that discussion, we sort of mentioned that France was, in my opinion, very much to the left of the political spectrum, even in Europe, which is already on the left of the political spectrum for the rest of the world. And I'm usually being accused, again, using quotes, usually being accused of being a left-wing pinko nut job by other people, because, you know, I think of myself as very much of a social democrat. You know, I'm for healthcare being provided by the state. I'm for education being provided by the state. I'm for unemployment benefits. I want, you know, I was very in favor of gay marriage. I have a lot of left wing, what the rest of the world would consider left wing opinions and ideas. And I thought it was illustrating that point that France is to the left of all of this, I thought it was illustrating that point really well, that a couple of French people came to me and said, ah, oh, you know, it was interesting, but you're such a right-wing person. And I'm like, oh my God, how does that even work? You know, I think it's really important to put yourself out of your environment to look at it more clearly. That's something we said in that show. And I think that a lot of people, not just in France, but in this case, it was relevant for France, a lot of people would really benefit from getting out of it. And it's not easy, you know? It's not like you just look at the things you've always looked at and thought, and all of a sudden, one day, because someone tells you, well, you know, look at it differently, you all of a sudden start looking at it differently. But I think what we're trying to do with this show is really to show people that are in a specific context and environment that there are other ways to look at it. And maybe when you look around and look at a broader scope of everything that exists, you consider the thing you've always known a little bit differently. And that's the experience I've had, you know, moving around in the world. And right. I think, yeah. So.
Well, I was going to say it's perfect lead into what we're talking about, because it's team sports in the end, right? Your team, my team. And when you stand in one position, you can look at someone and assume they're something because they're on that other team. So for you who are, you're more on the liberal side of things, for someone who's on a certain position, you know, on that spectrum, looks at you and sees you to the right, they think, well, that person's to the right. They're on another team. When really, right. You're probably on the same team.
I would absolutely agree. All right, you know what? Let's not dwell on this too much. I just wanted to mention it because culturally, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the clicks thing. And again, short introduction. I think this is a fascinating phenomenon because obviously, culturally, we're influenced by, or not influenced, but exposed to a lot of the American way of life through movies and TV shows. And music and books and everything, and you know, even comic books and all of that. So I think we have a kind of an fascination and understanding and fascination and bewilderment for people who are outside of the US at what makes that high school experience and how important the cliques and groups and are. So you were saying that you were in a clique before we get into the whys and hows.
Yes. Well, I would have never said that out loud during the time, because that's not how you perceive it when you're in it. You don't think, I'm in a clique and there's a hierarchy and these are the factors that determine someone's popularity and this is how people transition from group to group. I mean, I know that now as a psychologist, but I don't know that. I didn't know it then, but I can look back and say, oh yeah, I definitely was in one and I have I played a certain role. I could kind of morph into other groups when I wanted, but my core group always was the same. And there's a name for that. And, you know, it's weird to look at it now backwards and say, oh yeah, that was happening.
So just to be clear, when we're talking about cliques, it's the different groups of people that are sort of lumped together by themselves or by others and sort of put one label on their heads, and that's what defines them. Like you have the geeks and the computer nerds and the emo people and the popular people
the theater
and the
spark jokes and the
right. So that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yes. And let's take, I'll back it up a little bit. How it even sort of gets started, something to think about is, and this is happening around the entire world. There's just a weird thing that happens in America. But as kids grow up, and as they transition from spending most of their free time and most of their sort of extra hours outside of school with people other than their family, right? They're with their family for years and years and years, and they slowly start to make this move into being with their peers more time than they are with their family. And in that transition, if you think about why a family, you know, what could be great about that is the stability of sort of, you know who you are, this is your last name, this is what we do, these are the foods we eat. It gives you kind of some foundation of like, oh, how do I work in the world?
And a sense of identity, I guess.
Yeah, that's just a faster way to say that. Sense of identity. So the sense of identity. And then what happens is our brains mature. And instead of things being all black and white as they are until we're about 8 or 9 years old, suddenly this pre-puberty stage of 10, 11, you know, starting puberty, we can think more abstractly. Our brain has actually grown to a place where we can have sort of discordant thoughts at the same time. And that hasn't happened before. You know, a perfect example is you tell a kid, don't smoke, smoking's bad. And then they see someone smoking and they're like, don't smoke, smoking's bad. That guy's bad.
Right.
They can't distinguish between a good person and a bad person who smokes or doesn't smoke because that's too big for their brain. And when their brain catches up, it's about that age. And then suddenly we flood it with hormones and puberty starts. And they also transition from being with their family, and they want to get away from the family to some extent, to a peer group. And in that transition, they are still needing a sense of identity. So this is where they fall into their teams, or they fall into the group that fits them best. And you notice when you just listed all those groups, they all have very strong identities. We could say, what do emos look like? What do the jocks look like? What do the cheerleaders look like? What do the geeks do on the weekend? I mean, we can list all of this, A, because it's in movies, but B, because people have sorted themselves by interest and by power structure, which I'll talk about more later, but yeah, but that's as you how tell it us, starts. But,
okay, so the sense of identity, obviously, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And once you say it, it seems very obvious. But right. If we want to put the U.S., you know, on the special side of the room for a second, this happens in every country and every culture, I'm sure. I mean, absolutely. Certainly in France, there was this kind of, you know, it was a little bit more homogenous, I think, in high school. I don't know how it is today, but certainly when I was in high school, it was homogenous and there were different groups, but it's not like you were absolutely excluded from one if you were right. unpopular or, and it seems, and there I'm going to ask for your expertise in like actual real life. It seems that the representation in pop culture is super extreme. Like they don't even talk to one another. They make fun of one another. And I know, you know, intellectually, I understand that movies aren't real life. And that,
good,
you know,
good.
I've
progress.
Learned that when I've seen how they represent hacking in movies. And right. I know real life hacking. And I realize it's not actually how it happens in those movies. So
right. 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 I love when they portray therapists. It's also not how it happens in real life.
You know, I've started to realize that everything, it's like, it's really educational to see in a movie something that you actually know in real life yeah. and see how inaccurate it is. And so from then you can extrapolate and understand how inaccurate everything that is in a movie actually is.
Right.
So well, coming no, back no- to the clicks. Sorry,
well, I was going to say, no one wants to watch regular life. I mean, there's a guess, reason yeah. they amp it up and characterize things. I heard an interesting podcast about, what's that called in New York? Central Casting, where it literally is a thing where they, in New York, where you line up in the morning or California or whatever, and you line up and you're basically trying to be extras in movies. And you will be in if you fit a stereotype. And if you think about that, everything we see in movies, it's because they've tested it to see if it's believable or not. So an example this woman gave was, so if I'm going to stage a scene of New York, I will put everyone in dark clothing with dark hair, walking quickly on a sidewalk. I mean, we've all seen this image a million times, right?
With a cup of coffee in there.
With a cup of coffee, yes. And everyone's in a hurry and people are yelling in an accent at a taxi or whatever. So that's what we think of as New York. Well, when they put that in a movie, all of us, it doesn't distract us because we know exactly, oh, that's New York. We expect that. So art sometimes trains us what to think as well. But this particular woman said, so she just cast a movie like that. And then she went to New York herself. She's walking down the street and she said the majority of the people on the street had blonde hair. She's never thought that was even possible before. And people had light color clothing on and it felt so weird to her. She went, oh, wait, New York doesn't actually look like what I just did, but people won't buy it. They want to see what they right, think New right. York is. I think that has something to do with sort of what our brains like to sort and categorize things so they make sense to us. So when we stereotype something or even racism, you could say is an extreme form of this, of what is familiar and seems right feels right. That's that black and white thing right. I think some adults yeah. keep taking. So when you get to high school, you've been doing this already. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about some studies I found that I think are pretty interesting.
The studies are going to be talking about real life. I just want to to understand. I would like you to tell us how accurate this is, because we don't know actual American high school, right?
Right.
So, how far from the truth is that fantastical image that we have of the cliques in high school that we've created through the movies?
So
is it like that, or
I can? Sorry, I forgot the question. I got so excited.
That's fine.
I can speak from my own experience. I happened to run into an American today and asked him about his high school in California. So I thought I could get, two perspectives.
Cool.
And it's very similar in sort of the structural context, meaning you do have the different groups. You have the athletes that hang out together. You have the music people that hang out together. You have the swim team that doesn't talk to anyone because they're always practicing together and never have time. You have these variations of groups. That is accurate. But what is not accurate is the intensity which you see in most movies. Yes, there's bullying, and yes, there's leaving people out. And not to say there aren't, cases here or there. Of course there are, but it's obviously much less dramatic. You don't have a common school day where, everyone's devastated because of the interaction that happened in school for the majority of kids. Not to say that can't happen to some, but it's definitely more dramatic. So here's a great example. Have you seen High School Musical?
I don't think I have.
Okay. So imagine everything you've seen about high school in America. Now make it a Disney-fied musical.
That sounds horrendous. But
with Zac Efron. And wow. It was filmed in a building, a school building not far from my house when we lived in Utah. And so it was filmed there. Actually, my brother and his wife and kids were extras in it because they were the only Koreans in the valley. So they needed some color. Anyway, they filmed it there. And one time I was like, I got to go see what it looks like. Because if you see the movie, it's a magical kingdom of high school. It's ridiculous. Like nothing's like that. So I went to the building, and it's so funny because it was so clear how much they had to upstage everything to make that movie look the way it did. And the building looks sort of like it, but not really. And so it's a perfect example of like seeing the sort of skeleton behind the stuff. It's not typically real.
So for example, a typical scene, in that kind of movie, you would have the, obviously I keep thinking about Breakfast Club, but that's
right.
Almost a different kind of thing. But In these kinds of movies, you would have the popular girls that, are completely insufferable and look down on not even the nerds, but, anyone else who walks by. Is that you were saying you were in a clique. Was that the kind of clique you were in?
No.
So does that happen? Do the popular girls, are they actually horribly spoiled, insufferable people, or is it just that will they answer you if you're not part of the right clique when you come and ask for notes from a class or something?
I have never seen that in real life.
Okay, so it's not that extreme.
No, it's not that extreme. And here's why this even exists in America is, and I can share what happens in Sweden as an example of the antithesis. Mm-hmm. So here they go to school until ninth grade, which is about 14. And then they choose which high school they're going to go to. And their high schools, so you choose. So you sort yourself. I'm going to go to the athlete high school. I'm going to go to the music high school. So they do regular classes, but they have an emphasis, right? So it's like a magnet school in the United States where you go to a specific school for a specific set of training and, that type of thing. So they have already sorted themselves into cliques before they even walk through that high school building. So they're already a little bit similar. And that in Sweden, anyway, is not based on geography at all. So my kids could travel 45 minutes by train every day to go to a high school that, they're the only ones from this town that go to this school. So it isn't geography, it's choice. You're choosing where you're going to end up. So you're choosing who you're with. American high schools are based on geography, and often they try to mix the wealthier kid areas with the poorer neighborhoods to get a blend that's going to benefit the school, they think, and then they shove them all into one building. And so the only determinant for why they are there, because you don't get to choose often, there's some schools and some states are trying to change some of that, you're there because you live in the boundaries of that school. And I think that is the main difference I can come up with how it gets created. And it would happen in Sweden if it was done the same way. I don't think it would be all that different. Except for there is another factor that's interesting, and this may go along with my team sports idea, and that is they don't have sports in school. So if you play football or you play tennis or basketball or whatever you play, you go to a club that's in the community, and then you just go to school to go to school. There isn't blending of the two things. So this heightened sense of belonging to your school is, I mean, it's really heightened based on sports and those kind of activities where we win, you lose, and it builds that camaraderie and unity that looks so fun on TV. And it is, it's really fun. But I think it's another factor why this exists so strongly in the United States and maybe not in other places.
But, you know, in France, for example, there is this geographical division of high schools.
Okay.
And of every school, actually. And still, it seems like it's that division of cliques is incredibly heightened in the U.S. compared to France. And we don't have... I guess France is an integration machine. We really try to be all children of the Republic, and you know, we're all very equal in every respect. And so school tries to put everyone on the same level. Maybe that's not happening in the US as much, but what strikes me as well in the U.S. for communities, I mean, there seems to be a really strong desire to define yourself through your heritage, your community, you know, which is in France, everyone's French. Everyone is, as I was saying, half jokingly, a child of the Republic. Yeah. And you're all equal, hopefully. In the U.S., there's, you know, the because it's a younger country, maybe, but there are the different, you have the, you know, the African Americans and the Asian Americans and the Native Americans and the Irish and the whatever, right? And everyone is holding on to their identity, community identity, very strongly. I'm wondering if that also doesn't, maybe not correlate exactly on a vertical level, but has the same origin somewhere that provokes that sense of that need for an identity in high school as well. I mean,
that's a great point. I think you're hitting on where kind of the core of this is. If you think about kind of the basic mentality of a communal society versus an individualistic society. So it's sort of survival of the fittest. And if you look at what cliques actually are, it's survival in, you know, it's sort of a petri dish of like,
right,
who's going to make it, who's not, what's, you know, where are you ranked, that type of thing. And that is very American. So when you say, oh, everyone's French and we're working on integration, and it's very much the same in Sweden. I mean, 100% of the time we're talking about everyone's equal, everyone's equal, everyone's equal all the time. And here they actually have a law that you can't think you're better than other people. And it's true.
How's it phrased, I wonder? If you think you're better, then you have to pay a fine.
I think the direct translation is, if you think you can't think you're the shit. but what happens is it really is internalized by them. It's really interesting to interact with them. It's so fun. And they have kind of a love-hate relationship with America, like most people do, which is like, it's kind of cool to watch and you're in awe, but it's also not the easiest culture to live in if you are not the strongest, the smartest, the fastest. Mm. And so that communal factor of, you know, we take care of our own and we are all this thing, we're all French or we're all whatever, isn't as strong. But the United States is huge. That's the other thing. So people, if you ask them their identity, like, how do you identify yourself? Well, they can say maybe their religious affiliation or the state they live in, or, you know, some organization they belong to, and or they'll say I'm American, but they'll say I'm American.
It's not like there's a lack of American pride. That's not what we're saying. But,
not at all. In fact, too much probably. But it's this very individualistic formation. So you do not have parents going into school saying, I demand that the kids are taught that we're all equal. You have parents going in saying, why is my kid not getting A, B, or C? And what is, you know, so you have this, it doesn't matter what everyone else is doing. You win. Now, here's the thing. So we have, everyone has integration problems, but one of the reasons I think the United States has certain successes in their integration situations is that everyone is buying in to the same idea, the American dream, right? Mm. Which is, if you just work hard enough, then you can be as rich as you want. You know, we all buy it hook, line, and sinker. And as long as we're all believing that, then we don't have to really worry about the poor. We don't have to worry about healthcare for everyone. We don't have to do some of those things because we can blame you if you're poor because you just aren't working hard enough.
Yeah.
And that to me is, I think the core reason why you get what you get with, I mean, it might be a big jump, but I think the high school individualism. So it's funny, you get into a group in order to practice your individualism. And that's consistent with development from family to peer group to moving into adulthood in America anyway, is proving that independence and, you know, sort of moving that way. Whereas in another culture, it may be staying close to your family is the value, or the communal idea, something different.
And, you know, I don't want to say that there isn't, you know, divisions in French society. Definitely sure. That exists. And certainly you have disenfranchised suburbs, and some portions of the country are much worse off than other portions, of course. But it seems like it's a different kind of division. And the ideal is, you know, everyone equal under the umbrella of the state, which sounds incredibly socialist. But for this idea of individualism seems like it could be at the origin, as we're saying, for those cliques, but it's also maybe it's because I'm looking at the, you know, pop culture image of this, right. But it seems very extreme. Let's talk about an actual real life example, that of Wendy Dunford when you were in a clique in high school. So finally, the answer to the cliffhanger, which clique was it? And let's start with that. Which clique was it? How hierarchical was it? And
well, so I don't know the official terms for any of it because I've read over all of them because there's a list. You probably remember Mean Girls that came out a couple years ago with Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, and it was more than a couple of years ago. But
yeah, I don't keep track of time very well. Anyway, there's an author who's written a book about it as well. And there's a lot of labels here, right? You can have lots of names and there's lots of roles people play. So I look at them and I think none of these fit, but I would describe it as, so you have the upper echelon, right? You have the very popular kids, and how I would describe them is they're all very attractive, and often they're athletes, and often there are people with wealth. And I went to a high school that had no diversity in race, but had lots of diversity in income, socioeconomic status. So the, sort of the top group, those are those guys. And then my group was what you would probably call the second group. I don't know, the edges, the fringe actually is the technical term, sort of on the fringe of the popular. And what that meant is we could blend with them. We could hang out with them a little bit. We were individually friends with those individuals, but they weren't the same parties. They weren't the same sort of activities necessarily. And if they crossed over, it was no big deal. There wasn't a lot of, like, oh, you can't, no. But it just wasn't a natural fit. But the friendliness between us and them was very common, and it was fine. But I never once thought, oh, I'm so popular. I always thought, oh, they're so popular.
Right. Okay. Right. But so you're defining two groups here, and you've referred to popularity a few times.
Yes.
Is that the main factor? Is it ranked from most popular to least popular? And how many of those groups did you have in your school? So you're in the second one. Were there like 5 or 10 or 3?
Right. There's probably officially 5, but there's okay. Then there's lots of outliers and small groups. And
let's simplify. Let's go Hollywood. Roughly 5.
Roughly 5. So okay. You have the cool kids, the popular kids, and then you have like just the fringe group, and then you have you have a lot of other groups. Now, I don't know how sort of nerds or geeks rank now, because they can, the technology is so different. Cause you know, I'm in high school, we had no technology.
Of course.
And so there wasn't a lot of value on anyone hacking into computers in the middle of the night. That was not a thing. And so maybe now that would flip, but there
was, but how was it then in your, when you were in high school, there were the groups below you. So you've described how you would interact with the group, with the popular kids.
Yes.
How would you interact with the ones below? And I understand that saying below is terrible,
below me. Yes.
But so, well, the less popular ones.
Right. Well, and what's interesting is I did not identify myself as being in any real one group except a tight group of girlfriends and then guys we hung out with, which you would say is a group, right? So I felt like I was part of many groups. I played a lot of sports. So each of my teams were another group that I would spend time with, and they didn't necessarily blend with my other groups. And then I also sang, so I was with the musical kids.
So, actually, sorry, I'm interrupting again, but that seems like an interesting distinction or realization. Do you think the kids that are in the cliques when they're young, do they realize that they're maybe ostracizing other people or being themselves those very strict cliques, or do they not know this at the time?
So there can be, I think, meanness happening, absolutely, where people are cruel. But I would say the average kid isn't worried about how other kids are feeling generally because of brain development. They are still so worried about themselves. How do they look? What people think of them? That empathic ability to sort of step in someone else's shoes, that comes with maturity and age. And I think that, you know, sort of the experiment of middle school and high school is a place where, you know, it's kind of Lord of the Flies, where everyone's trying to figure out where they stand and who not to mess with and who's safe and who am I. And so it's a complicated time, but I really don't think the average kid is as cruel as you would ever see on TV. And here's where I'm an old lady, right? Because now we have 100% of the time access to our social clique on social media. And I think it brings in a whole nother element. So you can't turn it off. So I could go home after interacting with popular kids and feeling kind of stupid that day and then just like regroup for the evening, watch a little TV, hang out with my family, talk to a friend. Now I would go home, I would look at Instagram and see that everyone was at a party I wasn't invited to. I'd look at Facebook and see how everyone's life looks so dang fun. And that's to me why there is evidence that the whole world has this, because Facebook is worldwide and it is nothing but a high school click 100% of the time. And it can be really painful. So I don't know what it's like to be a kid right now, but I have a hard time thinking that's easy to have it not shut off. Because your click group, again, includes famous people with Photoshop. And it includes, so, you know, your circles of who you can compare yourself to and feel bad that you don't, you know, meet up is huge and endless and unfair, you know, in many ways.
Yeah, that does sound pretty terrible for kids today. How do they do it, you know?
I don't know.
I often think, you know, regular old people would think, kids today, they don't understand how, you know, it was before. I think kids before, so adults today, don't understand the world of kids today.
No, they have no idea. You know, I've done I've had a couple clients who are middle school aged girls where they're depressed and they're, you know, almost suicidal, lots and lots of challenges. And I've done this with every one of them. And they've hated me for the first 10 days, but I have all of them get off social media and actually all technology for 30 days. Just take a break. And it is miraculous to see what happens.
Really?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, their faces, their eyes, the way they stand, everything changes. And what they learn. So then they go back, you know, they can go back to Instagram, they can go back to whatever they were doing before, but it gives their brain a break and a chance to sort of reboot and for them to realize when they go back that the crap never ends. They just have to decide how much they take
to react
in. And this works with adults. I mean, adults need it just as much. It's because the human brain has not evolved to handle all of this social comparison so much so quickly. And so it's an interesting technique. I recommend everyone try it. If you...
It's... It's definitely a challenge for anyone who is you know exposed to social media a lot, and maybe people who are a little bit public. I mean, I often say that the community of podcasters and the community around podcasters is very lucky because we have a very positive environment, and most people are very caring and well-meaning. There are always going to be a few annoying comments and people who are just out to ruin your day, and even that is hard to deal with. And it's really a process to actually learn to care less about these, like to actually not care as much as you initially instinctively react. It's working on yourself psychologically. It's really hard. So I can't imagine how difficult it would be for kids.
Right. Who haven't had the time to develop that sense of self. It's there in the middle of it. Who am I? And
they're sort of still defining themselves, learning to define themselves in relation to what other people think of them. So,
It's tricky.
There's another aspect of the clicks that I'm curious about. Again, the American versions. In the movies, but really any normal person looking at this would think that the most popular kids are usually the worst people in the world. And the sense of justice, maybe it's a romanticized version of reality in the movies, is that those on the higher echelon are actually the ones that are going to have horrible lives when they're adults. Yeah. And the jocks are going to end up, you know, working as clerks at the, I don't know, gas station or something like that. Yeah. And the nerds and the least popular ones are the ones that are going to go on to study and become clever and make lots of money and rule the world. And certainly the nerds today are enjoying a lot of popularity that they didn't have when I was a nerdy kid.
Right.
Is that any kind of real?
Actually, okay. I have a personal anecdote on that. And I also have some studies on that, which is interesting. But I think Hollywood ramps that up because that's what we all want to see.
Course.
But it actually is kind of true. So let me give you some terms really quick to define some things. There's sociometric status, and that's if people like you, right? If you have social skills, you're friendly, you're funny, you're just going to be more likable, right? There's that facet. And then the other one is perceived popularity, and that is individuals with status or power, and they can navigate or even manipulate, you know, the situation in high school. Those are the jocks who you know the ones that are portrayed as they're kind of jerks and they don't have time for anyone else. They have figured out how to have the power, right? So those two metrics are pretty important, this sort of likability and then the popularity. And what they have found is those with high perceived popularity, so the cool kids, right, in high school, it's predictive of alcohol use, early sexual activity, and smoking. So they will experiment with certain things way before other kids will. And often these kids hit puberty earlier, and interact with the opposite gender much earlier than other kids who are not quite in that category. So in some ways, they're actually physically peaking a little earlier than the other kids and reaching sexual maturity earlier. But they're also sort of socially peaking. And so if they have just the I'm popular and they don't have that other likability, they don't necessarily do well. They've shown that it's associated with a drop of that sociometric status, aka they peak in high school, right? So that is real. The thing you're describing is real. And then they've shown that long-term outcomes for people in the middle, so not the ones who are really isolated, the loners.
Sorry, just want to let that sink in for a second. There's actual science showing that if you're popular in high school, it is a symptom of other things that are probably going to make you less successful later in life. That's what you're saying.
It's
a general trend, but
it's a general. But and it could, if you just have the popularity part. If you don't have the social skills, the sense of humor, the friendliness. So you can be really popular and everyone sees you as popular, but if you have these other things going on, you're going to be fine. But if you just have the perceived popularity, like you sort of scare everyone, right? Mm. You're likely not going to do well in your life. That's one of the things it's showing. So you think about all those mothers or fathers out there, like, my kid's so popular. They should be hoping that my kid's so in the middle. That's really what they should be hoping. Because the kids in the middle will do the best long-term. The kids who are very isolated and sort of out of all areas of connection with other cliques and kids don't do as well as the most popular, interestingly. So my personal experience is, so I am an expert in this follow-up business because I was in charge of my 20th year high school reunion before we left America, literally like a month before. It was kind of chaotic. And so we put this reunion together and it was so interesting. The people who I would consider in the middle echelon of, you know, not the most popular, people knew them and they were great and smart and lots of nerds in that category and lots of athletes, lots of different people. They're just kind of there in the middle. I contacted all of them on LinkedIn, right? I was going through name after name after name and I could see what their jobs were. I could see their education. So with social media, I could look exactly who has been successful, at least on measures of what school you went to and, you know, whatever. And I could look on Facebook. And because so I went through all the ways to see how everyone's doing. And what was so intriguing is this was totally true. Those folks in the middle are like running the country. And then the most popular kids were okay. Most of them are divorced. Most of them, you know, had some little trouble here or there. And the perfect example, so one guy was a football player and was so overweight. I mean, he could hardly get really? Through the door. Yeah. And that's a big problem with those big kids when you're 17 and you weigh 300 pounds. It's not going to go good after, you know, that type of thing. But here's the craziest part is my friend always had a crush on this guy. His name, she called him, was the cool kid because he was everything you know, to be the cool guy, right? And he drank and he had a million girlfriends and he was the guy. Anyway, he comes to our high school reunion, 2 hours late, just drunk as a skunk. And he had that, you know, your face, when alcoholic face where all the blood vessels have popped. So we're 38 years old and he looked like a 60-year-old man.
Jesus. And, I mean, that's a script for a Hollywood movie about, high school.
I know. And my friend was like, wow, I'm really glad that never turned into any kind of relationship. and it was, this is a pretty extreme example, but someone who has done really not very much since high school, his peak was then. It's really actually sad. So it really is, there's a lot of evidence and I've seen it myself. It was very, very bizarre to go through everyone's occupation and go, wow.
You know, it is strange that in that regard, it's not, I mean, let's not be definitive about everything. Obviously it's just trends, but it's really interesting that this is also sort of rooted in some kind of reality. You were talking about studies about European countries where,
yeah,
this was relevant as well.
Well, and more than anything, just to show how early this starts. So there's a study out of the Netherlands, and they just looked at tons and tons of kids in first and second grade. And what they found was in the average, like a certain township or area, in schools, they would find at least 29 cliques within the first grade. So each clique had about...
How old are you in the first grade?
So first grade in the Netherlands, they're probably 7, 6.
Oh, right. Okay. So first grade is when you start school. Okay.
When you start school,
we don't have the same system in France.
Yes,
so I'm
of course.
Confused.
And so they had 29 cliques with about 5-ish members in each clique. And then in second grade, they followed them for a couple of years. In second grade, there were 25 cliques on average with about 6 members. So apparently they got a little more inclusive and added a guy. but if you think about that, I'm sure you could replicate that in any country, most countries in the world, that this is a human behavior. This isn't some weird anomaly that just happens in American high schools. It starts very young and it's social comparison theory. We're very tribal humans. We are humans.
Beings.
We're very tribal. So we know how we're doing based on our position in a group, right? We know we're okay if we're dressed like everyone else. We know we're acceptable if we speak, eat, you know, do some of those things. Some it's a way of knowing our identity or knowing if we're okay or not. That can be very foundational to most of us. And there's evidence that it starts in school, and school is a sort of an artificial thing we created anyway. Put all these people together and they learn, but what they're also doing is navigating that social landscape that can be pretty tricky. So it happens. What's interesting is the outcomes of some of this. We think, oh, it's negative, it's negative, it's negative, but there's actually some benefits.
And that's actually a good thing to, we're going to get out of here fairly soon, but that's a good thing to discuss as well, because yes, we've been pretty negative on all of
yes.
this.
And what they have found is that boys, if they're isolated, they're not like in a clique, or, you know, they're kind of fringy, you know, they still can do okay. Girls have more problems if they're isolated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is interesting. I think some of that might be, girls are meaner. I don't know. Girls are rough. I mean, really, you know, that what's that phrase? There's nothing like a woman scorned, right? But there's nothing like three teenage girls trying to get along. I mean, they're fun. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking and offend all the women in the world. The other thing is, there was a fun study out of Canada where they realized one of the most important things that came out of cliques. Apparently there's cliques in Canada and they're so nice in Canada. So, you know, that is,
it's yeah, racist. No, I mean, everything is amazing in Canada. I think we understand this from movies and TV shows.
Okay,
as well.
Good. But what I was going to say really quick is that they found that these cliques help children to externalize problems instead of internalize problems. And if you're a psychotherapist out there listening, you know how important this is. The difference between someone who sees something bad happen or something negative happens in their life and they internalize it, it's all about them, they are broken, they are the problem. That's what it means to internalize a problem. And those who can see that, okay, it's on the outside of me, I'm not fundamentally broken, this is a thing that's happened, or I've made a mistake, I can do something about it, is a incredibly resilient characteristics that a characteristic we all need. And what they found is cliques help kids to do that.
How so though? How does it, because they talk about stuff or because they relate to other outside things or?
Well, I think, and I don't know, I haven't read the original study, but my guess would be that it has something to do with having that feedback loop of other people and friends that are a safety net, just like a family would probably do the same thing. And in fact, we know that from early child studies is that externalizing and internalizing problems, if you're in an abusive home and it doesn't feel safe or stable, you're going to internalize your problems. If it's a stable home and something occurs and there's open communication, there's more safety, you feel, you know, your basic needs are being taken care of, then you're able to externalize problems. And I think it's probably the same thing. We've just now moved into the peer group being the basis instead of the friendship, instead of the family.
Right. So it's kind of, well, I guess it's kind of your family outside of your home. Yeah. It's the people that you're, well, your clique. But, you know, I understand all of this. There's still, I guess we addressed it with the idea of individualism, but it still seems strange how intense that aspect of childhood and teenage years, which exists in all countries, I'm sure,
right.
But how extreme it is, it seems to be at least in the US. And I don't know how to exactly talk about it, because obviously I my impressions are from books and TV shows, but it seems like it rises to a level that is not healthy, that does at least make high school harder than it needs to be. It's always going to be hard, but right?
Sure. And if you're in the right group or you have the right experience, you're going to love your experience and remember it and go back to your reunions. I mean, that tells you something. When there's a reunion every 10 years for this time that was only 3 years long, like we're still doing that. Like, what is that about? Some people do it with college reunions, but it's not as common. You don't usually do it with your, like, you know, fourth grade math class reunion. You do it with your high school class. And I've thought
about
this.
Yeah.
I think it's because our brain is new at that point. We are having experiences we've never had before, feelings we've never had before. I mean, they've said things like, Spotify did a funny research project on the music we listen to. After 36, we stop searching for new music. It's like our brain's full by then. But if you think about it, and what they found is that people at about that age will start to seek out the music of their adolescence. And they can tell this because they know everything about you. But if you think about that, the music you listened to when you fell in love the first time is so integrally, there's a word, tied to memory, to feelings, to all that newness. I mean, it imprints pretty strongly. So there is something to be said for why the intensity is so strong and why people continually revisit. There's half the people want to go to reunion because they have good memories. There are half that would never want to walk through that door. I mean, how many songs are about, let me walk into my high school reunion and show you I'm a superstar, just to throw it in your face. You know, it's because it really has a pivotal impact.
Yes,
is it dangerous? I think TV exaggerates it, but I do think it's there for sure. It's there.
I keep coming back to the same idea. It's super intense. It's the case everywhere again, but it seems super intense, more intense in the US.
Yeah.
Individualism, I don't think would explain all of it.
Do you think some of it might be just proximity to each other? So in France, did you have sports teams in your high school?
No, in France, you spend a lot of time in high school, but you spend a lot of time just studying. Like there's a ridiculous, and that I didn't realize before I looked at, you know, we were talking about at the beginning of the show, looking at other places to see how they do things.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize we were studying so much. We study from, you know, maybe 9 to 5, and there are 8 hours of like classes for that entire time with very short breaks. It's very intense. And there is a little bit of sports and a little bit of music and a little bit, but you know, it's like 2 hours a week. Most of it is just sit in class, read a book, listen to the teacher. So it's not like this communal, little town thing. It's just the place where you go to sit in a class to read a book.
Right. Have you seen Friday Night Lights?
Yes. I love that show. I love
it. So it's fantastic. And my husband's from the South. And as we watch that show every 20 minutes, I'd pause and look at him and say, is that real? And so within my own country, there is a section called Texas that is as foreign to me as anything else. But that level of love of football and family and God and country, I mean, that is so intense there. You think, wow, that can't be real. It's real. So I can see why outside you'd think America was all that intense. But again, think about your favorite football team. Think about your favorite rugby in England is like one of my favorite things to watch. That communal, spontaneous singing, the bonding, the crying, the winning together. There's nothing that bonds you more. So I really think a big factor here is sports in high school. And it can be musicals in high school. It depends on, you know, the area. I have a friend in Burbank and her kids are in choir theater and you like the glee stuff started there. Right. And that is the coolest kids. And in my high school, that is not the coolest kids. So it depends on where you're from.
Yeah. I guess, you know, there's one thing that is actually, more easy to identify somehow. It's that what you're saying about the activity, I didn't quite put my finger on it. I couldn't put my finger on it before, but definitely that is a kind of thing we don't really do, but that's integrated into high school in the US.
Yes.
And you are also part of it. I didn't, you know, it didn't resonate earlier, but you were saying you were part of different groups because of the different activities you were doing.
Yeah.
And so that is actually part of your high school experience. Whereas, at least for France, I'm sure other people have different experiences. But for France, high school is not your whole life, I guess. Even when you are in high school, it's a super important part of it, but it's not your entire life, which maybe is a little bit different in the US.
Oh, yeah. I think high school is all your life when you're in the United States, at least those first couple years. That by your senior year, you're kind of sick of it, and you maybe don't hang out so much. But that's a really good point, because I think there's a traditional, at least a history in Europe. I know England's similar. You know, you're done with school legally at a younger age than we are in the United States. You're done at 16. I know that's true in Sweden, and I think it's England
well,
as well.
Well, everyone continues until, you know, not everyone, but most people continue. It's not
Yes, of course. But you think about that split at 16, you're now onto a track of, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to, you know, you're, it's like perpetual adolescence is, you know, sort of worshipped in the United States. We're all Peter Pan. So how long can we just have fun? So now we go to college and we just drink for 4 years, and then we're like, maybe I should get a job. So there's this very like elongating adolescence. Whereas I feel like in Sweden in particular, these kids are dead serious about their future careers starting at 16. Whereas at 16 in the United States, you just got your license. You can drive to football game. Like, you are not thinking, I want to be an architect. You are thinking, what is fun and what can I do next? And
definitely in France, when you get at 16, you sort of choose your first different type of, you know, the different section of high school you're going to go to, and you focus more on literature or science or, you know, physics and all of that. And then high school, when you're done with high school, you go to college. But that also could be an interesting discussion to have, the college experience in the US. In France, it is incredibly different. Yes, you're going to have fun and you feel more independent for the first time and you're sort of an adult, but you're there to learn your craft and to get a job at some point. It's not, it's really not like, it's serious stuff. There are a lot of people in the US, obviously, that go to college and that are serious and that study, but that, again, image of, party town, USA, I'm 18 and I'm in college now, is so much more intense than it is, at least in France, and I'm guessing in Europe. And you are, I would think on average, you're more of an adult at 18 or 20 in Europe than you are in the US. Maybe
I would absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. But having said all of this, by the way, I'm the number one America basher there is in all of Sweden. So just everyone forgive me, because it's embarrassing when you step outside and look at it sometimes.
Again, the idea of looking at things from the outside can be enlightening.
It's true. And when I'm asked 100 times the first year I lived here, is high school really like it is in the movie? I mean, it is such a common question. Because it's fascinating from the outside, but when, you know, you realize like, wow, we seem like crazy people sometimes, but having said all of this, I would like to move back to the United States. So my kid, my current 10-year-old, my older child, I don't think high school fits her very well, but my 10-year-old, I want him to have high school in America. Isn't that interesting?
That's
that
very
knowing
interesting,
all this,
yeah.
All my experiences, is because I thought it was so fun. Like, I really loved it. But I also noticed I was in that middle group. Like, I had the benefits of that socializing, and I had lots of diversity of things I did. So I feel like it really fit me well. I recognize that's not true for everyone. So I project that on him. Oh, he needs that. He'll love that.
But I wonder also, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I wonder if we're not taking a few extreme examples in both, you know, extremes, which are actually not by far the majority, and maybe the majority is, as it always is, that this middle group that is just average and normal, and, you know, is not represented by all of these examples that we've given.
Yeah, you won't see Girls Gone Wild, Spring Break, Florida 2000, whatever, with just your average American students. I mean, it may seem that way because you don't know. But I think there's another factor here, which is that my idea that I kind of mentioned before about, you know, the photoshopped social circle these people have to deal with now as teenagers, like, you know, when they're looking at Instagram feeds that are professionally managed and they're thinking, I'm supposed to look that way or I'm supposed to do these things. Their peer groups have gotten bigger and perfected. And that's really dangerous to me. That's easily the scarier thing than any high school is. It's just made what's hard about high school, it's sort of ramped it up at a pretty vulnerable age. And so I don't know how you run from that or change that. I think it's a really tricky blend. But I do think some inoculation comes from finding good friends in high school if you can do that. I just went to Mexico to get some sunshine. I told you that. I thought I was going to die and I needed some vitamin D so badly. And I went to Mexico with seven of my high school girlfriends. We have been friends for this long. We're all 40. It was our 40th birthday party for ourselves. And, you know, it's so much has changed. We have kids and we all live around the world. And, but it was amazing that those 3 years means that we would travel together too. You know, it's crazy when I think about that, but some of that bonding is, can be really powerful and really beneficial. It can also be a pretty crappy experience for people too. And I recognize that as well. So it's hard to tell, but movies sure make it look either really fun or so scary. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think the intense, that also is a little bit different. I would think, in my experience at least, and I think in friends in general, certainly you make friends for maybe a longer time than in college, but I'm not even sure. I think it might be also less intense in every sense of the world for us here. At least it was for me. Maybe other people have different experiences, but all right. I think that's a pretty complete roundup of what we could say about high school cliques and high school and individualism and extreme behavior.
Well, I have a little homework for you. You should watch High School Musical.
You know, maybe I will. I think I might, because it's probably very different, but have you seen The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
That is also one of my, and maybe that's something I would like to say in closing of this episode. For how foreign it seems to me, and I'm sure to a lot of Europeans and people from other countries. I mean, I know that in Japan, at least, uniformity, we're talking about individualism.
Yeah.
Uniformity is enforced in Japanese high schools. And that's why we see some of the behaviors that we see. I know about Japan, and I'm sure it's not, you know, it might be representative of some of the aspects of Asian cultures to an extent. But for how it does seem very foreign to me to look at the American high schools, but at the same time, I mentioned Breakfast Club earlier, and the Perks of Being a Wallflower and all of this, the manifestation, the symptoms of what it is to be a teenager might be different, but those movies did speak to me in a very profound way, and they did reflect some of my experience as a teenager as well. So I think there is definitely a lot of kinship, or, you know, things that you can recognize in those experiences, even if they seem different at first. Maybe the causes or the core of what it means to define your identity, as we were saying earlier, defining yourself outside of your family is very, you know, is something that is universal. So
right. And I would add some sort of a weird element to this that should be probably a whole nother show, but I'll just mention it briefly.
Go ahead.
Is if you think about the dating patterns, American versus other, and of course I can only speak for Sweden, they don't date here. I mean, they like hang out a little and then they're like super together, and it's, there's not a lot of casual interactions. And I think at least my current explanation for that is high school is a chance to practice adulthood in a way that isn't, the consequences aren't really big. Whereas, you know, if you're studying 8 hours a day in France at 16, 17, you're being dead serious about where your future is going. And there's maybe not so much play learning, if that makes sense. Whereas I think the play learning that happens in American high schools is dating, interacting with a lot of people. It doesn't have to be all serious. In fact, and this was many years ago, obviously, but the couples who paired off and dated seriously were sort of dropped out of most groups. And so there wasn't a benefit to be exclusive in dating, even though you could be. It was sort of like, oh, they're dating, forget them. All right, off to us doing some fun thing together. And I don't know how much that exists in other cultures where the dating practices are, you know, sort of a play practice for future, you know, committed relationships.
So I don't know how exactly it works. I mean, There is definitely, it would be a completely entire other show, which I think would be fascinating, but definitely in France, there is no dating. You don't, like, if you're together, there's no, like, oh, we didn't say we were going to be exclusive. If you're together, you're together. You're not, you know, I mean, yes, the mistresses are famous in France, and, you know, there's a lot of that, I'm sure, everywhere, but on a theoretical level, at least, when you start, if you kiss and you sleep together, you're together. There's no, like, we have to discuss it. We have to decide whether or not, like, it's, and if you sleep with someone, or even if you start kissing at a party somewhere, and then, you know, you the next day you don't call, or go kiss someone else. I'm not even talking about having sex. Yeah. If you kiss someone else, you're an asshole. Like, it's completely not okay. Right. So yeah, it is.
Our level for that's a little higher, but it's yeah. I mean, it sounds super weird now that you're saying it, how we play lots of games.
Yeah. I mean, there are games here too, but that would be, you know, relationships would be a super fascinating topic to tackle one day. Definitely. But, all right, I think that is going to be it for this show. Thank you so much, Wendy, for being here. Before we close the show, I just want to read a couple of iTunes reviews, which we got from the UK and the US. And I really wanted to thank the people who did that. There's Mega BQ from the US who said the show was eye-opening. Eye-opening!
Wow.
He or she says.
Impressive.
Great international show from Australia. We have Keegan White, PLCOK168 was from Australia. Keegan White from the US is saying that the show is wonderful. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, FYEI from the UK, is saying that it's a great show, that they love it. And so thank you very much for doing this. As I say every time, it helps us getting a little bit more visibility. So if you have a little bit of time to lose and to waste, go to iTunes or your podcasting app of choice, and if you can leave a review and at least you know, a few stars in there, it would be very helpful. So thank you very much to all of those who did that.
And Keegan White, if you wouldn't mind writing in and letting Patrick know how wrong or right I am about high school in America.
Actually,
that's your homework, Keegan.
that would be pretty cool for listeners in general. If you can tell us about your experience in high school, if you know, in the US, of course, to let us know if it's very similar to what we see in the movies, or from other countries as well, how you you know, look at those American movies and maybe your experience in your own country. So that would be pretty awesome. Wendy, where can people find you outside of podcasting?
You can actually find me now. I've been avoiding.
I noticed.
Everything. Yes. So you can find me on Instagram at WENDIDUNFORD. I'm really creative with names. It's just my name. And you can see the Swedish life. I tend to avoid all the hard parts. It's all lovely in Photoshop. So join
it's
me
Sweden.
There.
It always is.
And then I'm also at therapythursdays.com, a little offshoot with my podcast with my brother Scott Johnson at TMS, whatever his stuff is. You probably can say that. Anyway, but I am at therapythursdays.com. So
yeah. So I noticed you launched the site, a couple of months ago? So
a couple of months ago, and I'm really slow at making it look good. It's hard. You people have a hard job.
I'm sure, you know, maybe we can give you a couple of tips.
Yeah, you should, because I can handle someone who's suicidal, but these websites, I don't know.
I love the first article titled, Grandpa is a Racist.
Yeah, that's a problem.
All right. For me, it's Not Patrick on Facebook and on Twitter. Of course, you can also find this show on frenchspin.com and go comment on the specific article for this episode if you wish to do so. And you will also find the show Pixels, where we talk about video games and video game news in general. So go and check both of those out at frenchspin.com. Thank you so much for listening. We should have a regular episode in about a couple of weeks. And after that, I'm off to Japan, and we'll see what happens then.
Wow.
Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.